Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined this morning by our live blog directors, Jamie Jorz and John Rahor. We're talking some Packers football. We're getting ready for another playoff game. To help preview that game, to take a look back at the Vikings game, we have joining us on the phone, as he does every Wednesday, from ProFootballFocus.com, we have Nathan Yonke joining us. Nathan, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Let's get right down to it. The Packers this past Sunday did a pretty good job containing this guy called Adrian Peterson, who put up almost 400 yards, did put up over 400 yards on him in the first two meetings of the season, but the Packers quarantined him, as I saw Tyler Dunn of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel describe it. Nathan, who deserves credit for containing Adrian Peterson?
I think most of all, it's how the game ended up going that stopped Adrian Peterson from having a huge game. In that very first drive, you could see that Adrian Peterson was having a good start to the game, but then Charles Woodson tackling him for a two-yard loss stopped the drive, held them to a field goal, and then every other drive in that first half, the Vikings passed more than they ran, which I think was the Vikings trying to get Joe Webb into some sort of rhythm. That never happened, so all of the Vikings' drives were really short, and then next thing you know, the Packers have a lead, and then the Vikings are forced to pass more. I think strategy-wise, the Vikings also moved one of their wide receivers in along with the tight end a lot more than they did in the Week 17 matchup, which allowed the safeties like Morgan Burnett and Charles Woodson to come in and make plays and allowed the Vikings not to get to the outside on their runs. And then if you want to credit one single defender who probably didn't get enough credit for stopping him, Ryan Pickett, he didn't record any tackles in the game, but after that first drive, he did a very good job of disrupting the middle of that line, which helped allow other players to come in and make the plays on Adrian Peterson.
One guy who I think helped stop Adrian Peterson and stop Joe Webb as well is cornerback Sam Shields. He, of course, coming up with the interception during Saturday's game. Do you see any similarities between the Sam Shields of 2010 and the Sam Shields of 2012?
The main similarity I see is that both players were playing well both in 2010 and 2012. The difference is Sam Shields has been playing much more consistently in 2012 than he was in 2010. This year he's allowed a catch rate of just 46.9%. which any time that you see a catch rate under 50%, you're looking at one of the better cornerbacks in the league, where in 2010 he was allowing a catch rate of 57.4%. There has been the problem where he has allowed some very long passes this year. There was an 80-yard pass allowed against the Saints earlier in the season, and then a 65-yard one allowed in Week 17. But he has played much more consistently in other areas, too. He's doubled the amount of passes defended he's had from 4 to 8, despite playing less this year than he did in 2010. And then another big thing is he has cut down on his missed tackles. He had 8 missed tackles in 2010, but he's only had 4 missed tackles this year.
Certainly improved play from Sam Shields. Over on the offensive side of the football, what can we say about the Packers running backs who found the end zone several times on Saturday, in particular DeJuan Harris and the job he's done both catching and running the ball, and then fullback John Kuhn?
I didn't see the running backs having a huge game. A lot of it was the passing game setting up the Packers to be really close to the end zone, and then one of the running backs just getting that final step done. I think the Packers this season, all of their running backs have been close to similar in their skills, but the big thing is how the offensive line has been doing. You could see that DeJuan Harris didn't have that great of a rushing average in this game, and a lot of it had to do with Evan Dedrick Smith getting pushed around all day by the Vikings defensive tackle Fred Evans and the Troy Guyon. So I think a lot of it's just how the offensive line does leads to how good the running backs end up doing. As for John Kuhn, he's had a couple of those big plays in this game, but overall he's been an average runner for a fullback and an average run blocker for a fullback. But the one key to be a successful running back in Green Bay is you need to do well in pass blocking. And Kuhn has been one of the most effective pass blocking backs in the league in 2012.
Opening up holes for these guys, both Kuhn and Harris, is right tackle Don Barclay. Now, in the first couple meetings against the Vikings, Don Barclay didn't exactly fare so well against Brian Robeson and Everson Griffin, but that seemed to change a little bit this past game against the Vikings in the wildcard round.
Yeah, I would completely agree with you there. The Vikings have a strategy that they have the same defensive ends playing against Barclay every single time that they play. So Barclay now has the experience against those two players. So in the first matchup, he didn't do well allowing three hurries and having two penalties. And then the second matchup, he allowed three sacks, a hit, and a hurry, along with one penalty. But in this game, Don Barclay barely had any mistakes. He did allow one sack, but that was on a play that Aaron Rodgers held onto the ball way too long. And then he allowed another hurry and had zero penalties, and that was it for Barclay in this game. So the fact that he was basically invisible was a big improvement on the first two matchups against the Vikings.
I think one of the big differences between the Packers and the Vikings was the play at quarterback. The Packers having Aaron Rodgers, who's been the only quarterback in the entire NFC to have a win in the playoffs among the playoff teams. And then the Vikings have a guy who didn't even throw a pass during the regular season in Joe Webb. Was that a big difference in Saturday's game, those two players?
Yeah, it would be easy to say that it was basically night and day, since if there was one thing that caused the Vikings to lose that game, it was Joe Webb. But Aaron Rodgers really didn't have that impressive of a game compared to most of his other games, which is still better than an average game for the average quarterback. But when Aaron Rodgers attempted passes that were in the air for 11 yards or more, he only completed 4 of his 11 passes, which is not nearly as good as we're used to seeing out of Aaron Rodgers on some of his deeper passes. And the passes that were in the air for 10 yards or less, he completed 19 of 22 passes, which is very consistent, which is why Aaron Rodgers was able to consistently get the ball down the field. But those passes aren't as difficult to make as the deeper passes, so it wasn't really as impressive out of Rodgers. Joe Webb was similar on his deep passes. He wasn't very consistent, but the difference was Webb was also inaccurate on his shorter passes. And then another problem Webb was having was he was holding onto the ball way too long. He had an average time to throw of 3.8 seconds, which is very high. And that led to the Packers getting more pressure than they usually get, which caused Webb to be even more inaccurate.
Something I find interesting here as we kind of start to look ahead to the 49ers game here in the divisional round is the Packers got a little bit of a preview from Joe Webb, a good running quarterback, no doubt. They saw a little bit of read option from the Vikings, and I think they're going to see that as well from the 49ers. What can you tell us about the 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick, his running ability in the read option?
Yeah, it's very good that the Packers were able to start getting into that mentality of going up against a running quarterback. A lot of his runs have been on scrambles where there's a pass rush and then Kaepernick runs out of the pocket and then gets a good 8 yards on his carries there. Over the season, he's also run the ball 21 times on design runs to the outside, which is where the Packers' weakness has been in stopping the run. But if they can shut down the outside like they were trying to do in this game, then they should be successful against Kaepernick. The big difference between the Vikings and the 49ers in terms of that is the Vikings have some very predictable formations. They typically have the same formations you would see out of an offense, plus one where the wide receiver on the strong side comes in and lines up by the tight end, or one where he does that, the tight end standing up, and then the fullback's kind of in a slot receiver role standing up so the three receivers are bunched to one side. But the Vikings run that kind of formation every single game multiple times so the Packers could see it coming. Where with the 49ers, they have a lot of different formations. They don't consistently use them, and they put more blockers on the field. So it's the Packers' preparation to know how to stop each of those formations that will decide if they can stop Kaepernick running or not.
Definitely something to watch for. Besides Colin Kaepernick, what else do we have to watch for from the 49ers?
It will be a very interesting game because the Packers' biggest strength is their offense, where the 49ers' biggest strength is their defense. Something that should make this game fairly different from the first time around is how the Packers' offensive line does against the 49ers' pass rush. On the Packers' right side, they'll be facing Ahmad Brooks, who only has one sack in the last 5 weeks, and Ray McDonald, who hasn't played nearly as well pass rushing as he has in past seasons. Then on the Packers' left side, they have Justin Smith, who's been going through an injury. And even if Justin Smith does play, he shouldn't be nearly as effective because of the injury. And then Auden Smith hasn't played nearly as well without Justin Smith being healthy. And Auden Smith has been held without a sack the last 3 weeks. So that should be a good sign for the Packers' offensive line, not facing as good of a pass rush as they would typically see out of the 49ers, which the 49ers have a great secondary with multiple Pro Bowlers and even the players not being in the Pro Bowl playing well. But if Aaron Rodgers has the time, he should be able to pick them apart somewhat. And then when the Packers are on defense, the key will be stopping the run. But if the Packers can get into a situation where they have the lead and forcing Kaepernick to pass, he's a very accurate passer both on deep and short passes, but they don't have the depth in their receivers that the Packers have in their secondary. So the Packers should be able to take away their best option, Michael Crabtree, who is having a breakout year, and then hold everyone else in check. So the big difference will be the Packers, if they can get an early lead, they should be able to hold on to it, where the 49ers like to slow down the game with their run game. And if the 49ers can play their kind of game, then we should see a close one going down to the final seconds.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Nathan, thank you so much for helping to give us a little preview of the game. We'll talk to you next week after the game unfolds.
Yep, thanks for having me, and good luck to the Packers.
All right. Thank you to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com for joining us here on Railbird Central this morning. And thanks to you, the listener, for tuning in and checking things out. We got more to talk about here. Let's get right to it. I think one of the stories of the day here, actually, and something that was published in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I'm not sure if Bob McGinn kind of got these results ahead of time because I haven't seen them published anywhere else yet, but Casey Hayward, Packers quarterback Casey Hayward, was named to the NFL's all-rookie team, so wanted to send a little bit of congratulations out to him, and I think that's kind of a big thing that he made the team and a good recognition, and it kind of shows how well he's played this season, and he's been an integral part of the Packers secondary, and almost something here, if I could question it a little bit, is again, why is Casey Hayward not out on the field more? He's kind of once again taken a backup role here, playing only in the Packers' nickel and dime situations, not out there on the field in their base defense, whereas Sam Shields is staying out there guarding the perimeter. Of course, Sam Shields has played very well, starting to play physical. But I think we're almost getting to a case here of where the Packers do not have their best 11 players on the field at all times. And I know this is certainly not an easy choice here. Perhaps, in relative terms, maybe one of the weaker points of the team is the inside linebackers, although I think A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones have done well. But, I mean, do you take those guys off the field simply to have Casey Hayward on? It's a difficult thing, and certainly you would have to have different personnel groupings for the Packers to do it. And again, I suppose that's a good situation to have where you have a lot of good players. But, Casey Hayward, though, congratulations to him. The only Packer named to the NFL's all-rookie team. So just announced yesterday, you'll find in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel today in an article by Bob McGinn. Another interesting story coming out of yesterday is that of center Jeff Saturday. If you happen to listen to the broadcast, the television broadcast, which, millions of people in America had heard, If you listen to Chris Collinsworth tell the story, he talked about Packers center Jeff Saturday and how there's been the transition to Evan Dietrich Smith, and we've certainly have gotten to know about that transition intimately here as Packer fans, and Evan Dietrich Smith has done a pretty good job so far. And as Chris Collinsworth would let you know, as he told on this past Saturday, he said that Jeff Saturday went to Coach McCarthy and asked to be out of the lineup. And that kind of, like, you kind of scratched your head a little bit and be like, it's not the story I heard. Of course, as soon as the move happened, you know, a couple weeks ago now, this right around Christmas time, actually, just right before Christmas, the Packers made the move to Evan Dietrich Smith, and you had heard that, you know, the Packers just decided to go in a different direction. You know, knowing Jeff Saturday is a little bit older, doesn't quite have the nimbleness anymore that it takes to play in the NFL, or they thought Evan Dietrich Smith would be a better option, and I think he is at this point in Jeff Saturday's career. But it's just not true what Chris Collinsworth says, as reported by Rob Domofsky of the Green Bay Press Gazette in today's edition. You can go over there, PackersNews.com, and find this story. No, the Packers decided to just go with Jeff Saturday. It wasn't Jeff Saturday asking out. It wasn't him requesting to be pulled. The Packers just made the move. And you know, Jeff Saturday's been quiet about it. He's been, you know, he doesn't want to be a distraction, and that's admirable, and that's the way he should be handling his business. But if you were confused as I was, don't buy into what Chris Collinsworth said. They got the whole story straight there, I think, at the Green Bay Press Gazette. So there's more on that there as well. Kind of looking forward perhaps here a little bit to this Vikings matchup here, trying to come up with, as I do every week, try to come up with titles for today's show and shows all the time. I try to get creative sometimes, and you know, I'm trying to think of puns and whatever, and thinking of candlestick. And here we go. It just came into my mind with candlestick. Pack be nimble, pack be quick, pack jumped over the candlestick. I don't know if that's lame or what, but it jumped into my mind, and it's apropos because a little bit of attention this week on the Candlestick Park turf. There was some photos pasted to Facebook somewhere, posted to Facebook, of Candlestick Park, and the 49ers had been trying kickers out this week, or one kicker, Billy Cundiff. They're trying him out because David Akers has had a poor season, and David Akers is now old, you know, for the NFL as a kicker. And you know, actually, I think he was the Pro Bowl kicker last season, but it shows you how much your skills can decline in one season. And David Akers has had a very good career. And if you remember, actually, it's hilarious. Remember week one against the 49ers at Lambeau Field? David Akers kicked, what was it, a 64-yard field goal, 63-yard field goal? 63! I mean, my goodness, that is incredibly long. And like, you're like, oh my God, we're watching one of the best kickers in the NFL. And he just kind of goes in the tank after that and goes downhill. And so now the 49ers checking out Billy Cundiff. I'm getting off on a tangent here, but there was pictures posted to Facebook about Cundiff trying out, and they showed him, you know, kicking on the Candlestick Park turf. But what you noticed about the picture was how, especially between the hashes of the football field, how worn out the field is. And you know, this is kind of an issue at this time of the year when you get into the winter season and the grass stops growing. And of course, there was all the attention this past weekend on the playoff game at Washington and the turf at RFK Field between the Redskins and the Seahawks. And you know, in that game, of course, Robert Griffin had injured his knee, and there's a ton of attention on that because apparently he wasn't cleared by the doctor, and the coaches played him anyway, and it's a whole hullabaloo in the nation's capital there in Washington. But anyway, I mean, the Packers potentially playing on a turf that doesn't look all, you know, it doesn't look all that bad to me. But it, like I said, it looks worn between the hashes, especially, you know, that's where most of the action is. And so, I mean, that's where the linemen are digging in every play. And so, you know, there's the potential for Packers playing on a bad field, especially if there, you know, ends up being rain or something like that, and kind of been, you know, almost known to happen in a place on the coast like that. Not to say it's going to happen, and I saw one report, a future, you know, forecast here, and we're still days away, so it's hard to tell. But the forecast looks like they'll avoid rain this weekend. But it you know, on the chance that it's a forecast is wrong, and we all know how often forecasts can be wrong. It could be the possibility the Packers play in a poor field, and I don't know. It's such a difference from what the Lambeau Field is. It's almost incredible how good of a job they do taking care of Lambeau Field. I think they've improved remarkably too since they've brought in these growing lights and have extended the growing season. The field is in such better shape at this time of year, which is incredible for a winter, you know, a place that knows harsh winters. You know, the winter in Green Bay, harsh as any in the entire NFL almost, especially when you consider in other places like Minnesota and Detroit, they have domes. So, it's Packers are really lucky to play on a nice field, and they played on a nice field last week. And, you know, there's almost no attention on it. You know, nobody notices a good field because everybody expects it to be that way. And now they go to potentially a bad situation here, and it could play a factor in the game. I mean, we'll see. There's time left before the game, and maybe they can patch things up a little bit. I don't know what you do. I don't think there's a whole lot you can do, but we'll see. And you know, maybe if the weather just stays fine, stays okay, maybe they can get away with it. So, but just one thing to watch here as the week unfolds, and we kind of have to look at the turf at Candlestick Park. As for some of the players playing on that turf, the Packers returned to practice yesterday, Tuesday, for the first time this week in preparation for the 49ers. And the practice reports from the reporters out there are that Jordy Nelson didn't practice. Not only Jordy Nelson, but also safety Jerron McMillan. And you know, the Packers are pretty relatively healthy, and they came out of the first playoff game against the Vikings relatively unscathed. And you know, JerMichael Finley actually was one of the guys who exited that Vikings game, but apparently he practiced, so he's fine and he's okay. The one we're concerned about the most this week is Jordy Nelson. Now, because of the atypical schedule this week, in which the Packers are playing on a Saturday instead of the usual Sunday, they didn't have to release any injury details yesterday, so we don't really know, you know, the deal. But we do know that Jordy Nelson didn't practice, so we don't know what part of the body. Is it the knee? Is it the hamstring? Is it an ankle? You know, earlier this season, Jordy Nelson had issues with both his hamstring and his knee, so wondering if perhaps he re-aggravated something. I know in interviews after the game, insisted that he'd be fine, he's okay. But, I mean, is that just a football player protecting his best interests and the team best interests? We'll see. We'll see how much longer he sits out this week. We'll see his status on Friday, so you know, we'll see. But just, again, some there to watch. Safety Jerron McMillan, this was the one that came out of nowhere. I mean, we saw this past Saturday Jordy Nelson limp off the field if you watched the game. But Jerron McMillan, there was no obvious injury why he would be missing practice yesterday, and perhaps it's just a personal matter. I mean, those things, you know, just life gets in the way every once in a while, or it could be an illness. We've seen the flu go around the Packers this season, which guys have missed a practice or two, things like that. But it just came out of nowhere this week. So keeping an eye on Jordy Nelson, keeping an eye on Jerron McMillan. Everybody else is looking pretty healthy. In fact, I saw even Jarrett Boykin return to practice. He suffered the ankle injury 2 weeks ago. I don't know if he'll be ready to play in this game or if he'll be active, but, you know, good news at least that he's getting healthy. So, we're watching all those things. You know, one of the big things that got attention yesterday is, you know, there were press conferences held for Mike McCarthy, and Aaron Rodgers had media availability and things like that. And, you know, just looking at the way the seasons have unfolded for the Packers and the 49ers, there's some attention this week on toughness and physicality. And I know Packers coach Mike McCarthy was asked about it yesterday, because the 49ers are known as being this tough, physical team. They've got hard hitters on defense, and I love the 49ers safeties. I think they're the best in the NFL there, Dante Whitner and Deshaun Golden. And you know, that's not it. I mean, of course, their linebacking crew is arguably the best in the NFL, probably is the best in the NFL when you look at all four of them, and pretty good defensive linemen there too, highlighted by Justin Smith, just known as being a physical team, and you know, their offensive line doing a good job too, road graders, you know, tough running game there in San Francisco. And they really, you know, smashed the Packers in the mouth in week one, and you know, that was basically the difference in the game. And the Packers don't have this you know, identity of being a physical team. Not to say they can't be, but I mean, what do you think of when you think of the Packers? You think of the explosive passing attack first and foremost, I think. You know, you think of Aaron Rodgers and all the wide receivers and how fast they can be and how many points they put up on the board and how elusive the receivers can be, things like that, and all the targets they have, including at tight end, even running back now. So that's what you think of first and foremost. If you think about the Packers defense, you know, last year, of course, they were a team that got all the sorts of interceptions, things like that. And this year, things are getting better and a little different on defense and getting more physical. But, you know, that's just not the first thing that comes to mind. So, you know, it's, you know, what kind of two different teams here. So, I mean, what's going to win out? What's going to win out? Will it be the physical team, or will it be the fast team? Or will the Packers increase their level of physicality as they have this year? They've gotten, at least, I think, an identity that's been more tough. The D has gotten leaps and bounds better this year as compared to last year. The Packers' running game looks better than it has in 2 years, you know. You think about last year and then how early this year things weren't going anywhere, and all of a sudden, you know, I've read a couple different places over the last several weeks, the Packers have like the 12th best running game in the NFL, and when they're usually near the bottom. And, you know, it helps that, you know, DeJuan Harris is doing his thing, but they've gotten some, you know, good play, good running, you know, better run blocking from the offensive line. Don Barkley, that seems to be one of his strengths. You know, it's part of the reason Evan Dietrich Smith has replaced Jeff Saturday in the lineup. So, you know, I just, again, these are all stories that are in the media this week, kind of things I'm going through here, things to watch, and it'll be interesting to see how this week plays out, how the Packers, you know, match up with the 49ers, and who's going to win, and who's going to win the individual battles, who's going to win the matchups, all sorts of interesting things to watch here. I know at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, they've been kind of previewing matchup and how players match up against one another, And I think they highlighted how the Packers might try to get JerMichael Finley lined up against Patrick Willis, who's not exactly the greatest in his coverage, and kind of an interesting thing to watch there. I looked at a post earlier this week at allgreenbaypackers.com about the matchup between Michael Crabtree and Tremont Williams, I think by Marcus Eversole there. And you know, again, it'd be interesting to see how all these matchups play out, and what kind of identity these what identity wins out between the Packers and the 49ers. So cool stuff this week to look forward to. Again, ready to near the end of the show here. Usually on Fridays here at Railbird Central, whenever the Packers play a road game, I look to fans or transplanted fans of the Packers who live in those cities. So if you know anybody who lives in San Francisco or did live in San Francisco that could kind of give us a visitor's guide to the city, kind of talk a little about tourism, let me know. I'm looking for somebody this Friday, just 2 days from now, to talk about the city of San Francisco for any Packer fans headed out there and just talk about the city in general. So kind of looking forward to that here in a couple days. So tweet me up or send me an email or something. But anyhow, folks, I'm Brian Kiervoo. I'm going to have to bug out here on a Wednesday morning here. Thanks for joining us. On behalf of Jamie Jors, on behalf of John Rahor, we're going to leave you here. And we'll see you Friday as we preview one more time, one last look at the Packers 49ers before Saturday's divisional matchup. So we'll see you later, everyone. Check out Cheesehead TV for all your news needs all week long. In the meantime here, I leave you with a song called Retrograde by Conspirator on Psy Fidelity Records. We'll see you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.
We got time. We got time for one more song with you guys here. It's been a pleasure, like I said, being back in the Georgia Theater. I played in this place so many times. It's nice to be back. We got Ghostland Observatory coming up next. We're Conspirator. Thank you all for having us.